Coming to you live from a noir rainy city somewhere in possibly America, possibly Europe, possibly Asia, who knows? It's a pan-international nightmare of serial killing just tragedy.
Yeah.
I am your co-host, Kevin Lenihan. With me, as always, is John Ferris, who's hopefully not the murderer. John, how are you doing today?
I'm fine. I'm possibly not a murderer.
Really?
Well, not at this current time.
You sure?
You can always aspire to something, can't you?
Yes, you have to have goals in this life. Now, if you were a murderer, if you were a serial killer, John, which we have loose in our fictional city right now in which we live.
Our fictional non-named city.
Our fictional non-named city that could be anywhere in the world. If you were a serial killer, I mean, you wouldn't tell me, would you?
No, I don't think so. I think you have to keep it secret unless...
Yeah, you wouldn't make it that easy for me, would you? You wouldn't be like the Jelly Bean Killer, who is the killer that's terrorizing our city. Our fictional serial... He's definitely a fictional serial killer that leaves jelly beans at the scene of the crime.
Ooh.
He puts them under the eyelids of his victims. Because he's mental, I assume.
Yeah, that kind of goes hand in hand with serial killers, I think.
Yeah, and maybe it's foolish for us to assume.
I think I'm too lazy to be a serial killer. Like, yeah, the amount of time and effort you have to put in to, like, I don't know. For the end goal, it's usually like, really?
And all the rituals and the... Sometimes it's like burying the bodies, or like if you're maybe one of the weirdos that wants them to be found.
Yeah, and I'm kind of like a scatterbrain as well, so like I would get caught instantly.
Because you forget where everything was.
I left my wallet there.
Oh shit, I left my wallet with my ID and everything just right next to the body. Oops.
It's like when I go to buy a pint of milk or something, it's like, uh-oh. Back in a minute.
Indeed. Well... Maybe you're not the killer, but if you would help me indulge in some vigilante justice, and maybe we can track down this killer, because the police in this fictional city aren't doing very much.
No.
They're very well. They're all just, I don't know, what's a good thing? Drinking coffee and eating donuts.
Donuts, yes.
Yeah, they always hang out at the donut shop.
Which, in fairness, sounds great. That sounds I'd much prefer to do that.
If that was my job, that would be pretty good. I'd be getting paid to hang out at the donut shop all night and eat donuts and drink coffee. That would be great. But anyway, in our awesome vigilante PI office that we have here, I have a little cinema set up. And I've got three movies, John.
Ooh.
Weirdly, exactly three, about fictional serial killers. One's not based on real life ones.
Yes.
These films for us to watch, which is very specific.
Yeah.
It's a very specific parameter, right? Because we have to have those parameters, otherwise what even is this show?
We're just breaking the fourth wall. Our Indeed. Serial killer is fictional.
Yeah, well, exactly. But so are we.
Yeah.
So, first up, I have Seven from 1995, directed by David Fincher.
Nice.
Yeah. Then we have Manhunter from 1986. Directed by Michael Mann.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Michael Mann Hunter.
Michael Mann and his Mann Hunter, yes. And then we have, from 2010, we have I Saw the Devil, directed by Kim Ji-woon.
Yes.
Ooh. So, I don't know why I made a spooky noise there, but
I think it was the word devil sparked it off.
Yeah, the devil and his spookiness, yes. Is the devil a serial killer? We won't know until we watch the film.
True.
So now let's sit down and we'll watch these movies and we'll find all about the devil. All right. So as far as rituals go, John, what do you think the jelly bean thing tells us about our serial killer? Do you think it's some kind of infantilization? Do you think he's like stuck in infancy or, you know, some kind of childlike... Reverie, what's the crack with that?
He puts it under the victim's eyes.
Yeah, ooh.
Is this like reminiscing the jelly beans behind the eyes? You know,
That sounds about right.
That turn of phrase, you know? Oh, he's got jelly beans in his eyes.
Yeah, it's I don't know, maybe the weird ritual doesn't mean anything.
Probably
or
not.
Does it, John? Because Ooh. It seemed to mean a fair bit to the killer in David Fincher's Seven.
It's probably the Bible.
Indeed, probably Milton or the Bible or Bible-adjacent things. So, John...
those things that serial killers love, the
they
Bible.
They love the Bible, they fucking do.
Yeah.
So, John, what did you think of David Fincher's Seven from 1995?
I always forget how good Seven is. I always, like... I know I like it, but every, like... Revisiting Seven here was great, because it was like so well directed, and the lighting and the atmosphere are pitch perfect. And
oh yes, speaking of friggin' rainy noir cities,
yeah, it's amazing. And it only stops raining once the serial killer is caught. It's like that's the only time it doesn't rain. Every other scene in it, it's miserable.
Yeah, it's pissing the rain, it's cloudy, it's blech.
Yeah,
which like is a, great.
And there's like a great kind of, like I think the acting, this is superb. Morgan Freeman and Brad Pitt are again, just like the rest of the movie, pitch perfect, just really, really own those roles. And they make this like really unique, awesome, almost like a deconstruction of the buddy cop movie.
It's such a wonderful... criticism almost of the 1980s cop movie.
Yeah.
In fact, specifically Brad Pitt's character is that. He is that to me.
Yeah.
He's like, he's being that guy, and the entire time Morgan Freeman's like, that's not how it works.
Yeah.
We don't do that stuff. You need to not be on this case if you're going to be that guy. Because you're never going to get through this and you're going to literally fall apart on me. Yeah, he's the whole film. He's basically just like, you shouldn't be on this case.
Yeah, the juxtaposition between the two. Like, there's that montage where they're going into, like, research mode quite early on in the movie. And Morgan Freeman, like, everything about his character tells you that this is just commonplace for him. And Brad Pitt, like, you know, he's Morgan Freeman goes to the library, and Brad Pitt is at home with everything laid out on the table. And Brad Pitt's character is like stressing out. He's rubbing the neck, like getting frustrated. Morgan Freeman's just calmly going through the books, and it's a wonderful wee juxtaposition between the two of like just how they approach this work. And
I
love the fact that Brad Pitt, he's not a rookie in this. That a lot of those buddy cop movies do is, you know, you have the one who's very green and he's in, and then you have the like Murtaugh type older cop,
the seasoned veteran of the force.
I'm getting too old for this shit.
But which he is doing that. I mean, it is just like he's retiring at the end of the week.
Yeah,
that's his thing in this. So they are kind of, they are exactly doing that.
Yeah,
but in such a way, in a way that's clever. And when you spot it, you're like, oh, I see what they're doing here.
Because they're not partners. It makes sense in this because.
He's basically just like, you're replacing me.
Yeah, so he has to kind of show him, right, well, this is the area, this is like, you know, like just showing him the ropes. It's like a handover thing, you know.
Aye.
As opposed to them working together and all that. But I think it's fantastic. There's loads of like callbacks as well that are very well handled. There's one in particular where Brad Pitt is opening up a bit to Morgan Freeman, and he's saying about how they went for like a sting operation or something like that, and someone got shot, and it's obviously had a traumatic effect on Brad Pitt's character. And then later when they get shot at, before he goes on the chase, and he's a very impulsive character, he's very action oriented, before he does anything, he just shouts back, "Were you hit?" And once he hears no, that's when he springs into action. It was like wee moments like those that are understated and not like, it's not dwelled on, or it's not like made a big deal of, but they inform the characters so well. Like I love the characters in this. They're a joy to watch. For those
reasons, they're all so well developed. Everybody, it is just like, it's gorgeous. It's
gorgeous and somehow horrible at the same time.
Yeah. It's ugly, it's gorgeous in its ugliness.
Yeah.
It's the whole film just has this great sort of sheen of filth.
Mm-hmm.
It's got this great, it feels, and people would say it's gritty or something like that. And it absolutely is gritty, as in it feels like it's covered in grit. and a layer of dirt over the whole thing that is exacerbated every time they go into a crime scene of some kind.
Yeah.
You're like, oh, except for like there's the...
It feels like you can smell those rooms and yeah. It's not a particularly good smell.
Yeah, they do a really good job in the dialogue with that stuff.
Yeah.
And the way characters are reacting. Like the gluttony death.
Oh, God, yeah.
Where like, they're just like, oh, and like everyone else, ugh. And then like Brad Pitt, that's the part where he's still swanning around all like... Jack the Lad, and then he looks under the table and into the bucket, and then he loses it too. Like, oh god! Or the sloth one—that's maybe like one of the worst ones for just like all the air fresheners hanging around everywhere, and everyone's covering their mouths and just looks disgusted.
Yeah,
by the whole thing, and every single one is just grim.
Yeah,
in a really sort of a really primal way of, oh, that's absolutely terrible. Oh, God. Yeah, it's just, it's excellent, and it's a fun sort of procedural thing, but I don't want to actually, to talk about it, it's hard to talk about it without spoiling anything.
Well, we could, I was thinking about this, I saw The Devil's going to be even more difficult to talk about, yeah. So I think we probably will have to employ some early spoiler warnings with these ones, because at the end of the day, if you're interested in serial killer movies, go see Seven. Mm. It's a very, you know,
oh yeah,
it's a classic. It is, you know,
yeah,
it's fantastic. It is a fantastic movie. So if you read the synopsis, serial killer is killing people.
Yeah,
you know. He's using the seven deadly sins as a reference point, let's say. So, like,
yes.
Killing people because greed, lust, whatever. And just go see it.
Yeah. It's like ironic. He's full on an ironic punishment murderer.
Yeah.
And that's what he's doing. And it's very clever. And every single one of them is vile. And
the music's great. The editing's great. The cinematography's great. So.
I don't know. Did Trent Reznor do the soundtrack, or is he just... It's Nine Inch Nails.
No, they did.
The
they did a remix of Closer.
Yeah.
In the intro, because I was sitting there going, "That's ridiculously close to Closer" when I was listening to it, and then it came up. It's like, okay, no, it's fine.
Yeah, you can hear his wee voice.
Help me.
yeah, and you're, oh, I know who that is.
Yep,
I know that guy. Yeah, so let's go. So it's a gorgeous film. It's very well made. It's David Fincher has done a few. He's got this thing about serial killers and maybe like profilers or something like that. I don't know if he trained as a friggin' serial killer profiler or something like that, but he has a lot of interest in it. I mean, this is the man who made Zodiac.
Yeah.
And also there was a great show on Netflix that he did that unfortunately it only ran for 2 seasons and I loved every fucking minute of it. I think it was supposed to finish on a third season and that never happened, but it's still on there. Mindhunter. It's absolutely brilliant. It's about the actual team of people at the FBI who were like behavioralist people.
Yeah.
Who basically, the people who invented the term serial killer and were trying with police forces around America to convince them, no, we can make a profile of this person and we can help you find them. And they're based on the true story of them doing that and starting that unit and the adversaries they faced along the way.
Yeah.
And the killers that they caught and maybe the ones that they ultimately didn't catch. There's sort of a running theme of, I don't want to go off on a tangent about actual real serial killers here. But there's one particular serial killer that they keep alluding to that if you know anything about it, you know they'll never get him.
Yeah.
Until a long time from then, and they won't be involved in that if you know who it is. And it's a whole thing that you keep getting scenes of that person doing what they're doing at the time these guys are developing all this stuff.
Oh, great.
And it's very, very, very good indeed. And I would highly recommend. I think David Fincher is a marvelous filmmaker in general.
Is. Yeah.
But I particularly like this and Zodiac, I think, are just fantastic.
Yeah, Zodiac's
I like
fantastic.
Fight Club, but I don't think I could ever watch it again. I think I'm sick to death of Fight Club. Just, and it's no just, fault of Fight Club.
No, it's definitely not. The game, no. The game, I remember being very, very good as well.
I think I hated the game, yeah. But I don't remember.
I remember enjoying it, but or maybe mixing it up with something. But
it was a fighting game, wasn't it?
What's that?
It was like a brawler. Was it? What was?
No, the
it
game.
Work?
No, it's game? Like, what do you call it? Michael Douglas? He's like
oh,
this rich
the game,
board.
I think you meant the game of the movie Fight Club.
Oh, no.
Because it was terrible.
No, I'm talking about movies, you maniac.
Because you just said the game.
I didn't even know there was a game of Fight Club.
Yeah, there was a Fight Club game. It was terrible.
Oh, that's brilliant.
It was really bad. Okay, I got to reset my fucking brain now. So, yes.
I was sitting there going, a brawler? It's like Michael Douglas is a boxer.
No,
I'm not young Michael Douglas. It's like fucking '60s Michael
Douglas.
Oh
my god! Right, okay. Oh, see, that's the problem when you call a film the game.
Yeah, David Fincher, you fucker.
Thank you, David Fincher. Now, yes, I'm gonna reset. Okay, the movie, the game. Yes, John, I like that movie too. I think that movie is very, very good.
But more importantly, did you like Fight Club, the game?
I didn't. It was awful.
I hear it was.
I was surprised when you said, "I think I liked it."
I heard it was a brawler.
Yeah, I was willing to hear you out for your justification about why you liked Fight Club, the game, but then
because you could pick meatloaf. I'm assuming.
I think maybe you could. I don't
because you could pick meatloaf and you could beat the shit out of Jared Leto. Maybe. Aww. I don't know. I'm assuming so.
That sounds like a really good fight. I would like to see. Oh, R.I.P. Meatloaf as well.
Yes.
Oh.
Yeah. But oh. Yes, he has done some very, very good movies. Maybe you should just watch the Chinese version of Fight Club if you're bored of it.
Oh, the new, oh yes, they edited it. Well, see, the thing is, they re-edited it.
Yeah.
If nobody knows about this, what was it? There was a Chinese state release of, I think it was on their state media, like when they were showing it on TV or something. So yeah, they changed the entire ending of Fight Club.
I heard it was just like a black screen just comes up with text just saying.
There's a point they have at the end where he's having the conversation with Tyler and blah blah blah, and then it fades to black, and it just says they were caught by the police because they left the clues, and everybody was raging because. In typical Chinese fascist rat bastard government style, I have no qualms about calling the Chinese government terrible.
Oh, they're awful.
I mean, I'm not going to say other governments around the world are doing a bang-up job or anything, but goddamn, the Chinese censorship is off the charts.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, I think they were arrogant enough to assume that they could get away with that.
That's crazy. That is just assuming people are morons. Yeah.
And then what happened was everyone had already seen Fight Club because China is flooded with piracy because it has to be.
Yeah.
Because you don't get to watch good movies in China for the most part unless you are importing pirate DVDs and whatnot.
Mm-hmm.
Or you're somehow downloading them or whatever. So loads of people had already seen Fight Club, so everybody knew that's not how the movie ended. And everybody was like, what the fuck are you doing? And then they had to, like, sort of put it back in. I think it's still heavily edited.
Yeah, I would assume so.
Yeah, a lot of stuff. There's so many, like, media rules in China about things you can and can't show that, again, I mean, other countries have been guilty of that. I mean, in the 80s, towards the end of the 80s in the UK, they had all that video nasty stuff, and they were really bad about trying to cut stuff.
Yeah.
There was a point where, was it even back whenever they were doing like the video release of the Texas Chainsaw Massacre, and they were like, they couldn't cut it. They were like, there's no way to cut this to make it acceptable to your standards and then have any about anything in the film make sense anymore. And, like, it was hard to pick points because, again, there's not a lot of gore in the Texas Chainsaw Massacre.
No, it's very much psychological.
It's Yeah, it's just like, it's just this horrible feeling, and it's constant, and everyone's creepy and horrible, and bad things are happening to people, but you don't necessarily see gore and stuff.
Yeah.
And it's really hard to cut around that, you know, and... But goddamn, I can't believe they changed the end of Fight Club, and it was stupid, and they got called out on it. Anyway, David Fincher is an excellent filmmaker. Yeah. This film is an excellent film. This is certainly one of the best sort of police procedural ones.
Yeah. Because when you're talking like kind of serial killer movies, they tend to focus on the actual investigation and the investigators. Yeah. Now, there's a few movies out there, maybe follow, well... One of the ones we will be getting to kind of follows the serial killer a lot more, but it's usually the last third of the movie the serial killer will reveal himself and all that.
Sometimes it's like only right at the end when they want it to be a twist.
Yeah,
and usually
it was me all the time. Yeah, oh.
Usually those movies are bad movies.
Yeah,
they are all pretty much 100%. Oh, we saw Seven, and we wanted to do that.
Yeah.
But we didn't have a good idea first.
Yeah.
We had the, I want to do Seven idea first. Like, I don't know if we talked about it before in this show. We've definitely discussed it. There's a movie called The Bone Collector that just like, right, we need Seven, but with a twist. So we'll put one of the detectives in like a bed so we can't get out of it.
Yeah.
And then we'll have the killer just be weird in some other super specific way, like Seven. And it's a bad fucking film, even with Denzel Washington. It's still awful.
Yeah.
It's boring. It's crap. There's some stuff I like in it, but it's not very good.
No.
It's not a David Fincher. It feels like it's emulating David Fincher and doing it poorly.
Yeah, it does it very badly.
Yeah, and we had, of course, we discussed on this show Saw before, which was sort of one of those as well, and it was definitely a We Saw Seven.
Yeah.
And we put in a bunch of techno. But again, as we discussed before, Saw still does have its merits. The first one's still kind of all right, but it's definitely like if Seven hadn't existed, you wouldn't have Saw.
Yeah.
And it's a shame that they got all those sequels and didn't just stop. And be the one movie. But like all in all, I think the performances in Seven are fucking excellent.
Mm-hmm.
It's so fucking well written. The dialogue is so good.
Yeah.
From end to end, it's beautifully made. It's got that great noir sheen to it. That is just like, look at the rain on the windows and all that shit. It's just, oh, I love it.
I also heard a story about the test screening of it went very badly. And it's no surprise, because they went around the streets asking people if they wanted to see a movie that had Brad Pitt, who his last movie before this was Legends of the Fall. And would you like to see Brad Pitt and Morgan Freeman, whose last movie was Driving Miss Daisy? or at least that's how they were pitching it. It's like, you know, Morgan Freeman from Driving Miss Daisy. So people were going in to this cinema with this horrible spectacle of a movie. Do you know that this movie is very dark and very grim, and there will be people
talk about fucking setting people's expectations in completely the wrong fucking level. Holy shit!
Yeah, it's like advertising to someone who was in like the Smurfs movie or something like that, and then showing them, I don't know, Seven.
Yeah, and it's also, in a way, you can also say, this is from the guy who made Alien 3.
Yeah.
And you can be like, what? I don't want to see that shit.
Jesus.
Thank fuck he got to make this, though, because fucking Alien 3 was such a fucking train wreck. Like, I mean, that's like a...
And I mean, he's on record as saying, like, the way Alien 3 was such a heartache for him, because he just kept getting blocked, like, everything he wanted to do was just ruined by the studio and the producers and stuff like that. So he had a very bad experience, and I think he went back to music videos for a while. And
he'd done a lot of Madonna videos, I think.
Yeah. Oh, he did. He did loads. He did like Michael Jackson, Madonna, George Michael, A Perfect Circle. He did Judith.
Oh yeah.
And stuff like that. So, but yeah, thankfully he did return to the big screen, because. Mm-hmm. Yeah, as we mentioned before, he's given us some absolutely fantastic movies,
some fucking bangers.
Bangers.
Aye. films I have loved.
Yeah.
So thank you, David Fincher. And thank you for Seven. Again, much like yourself, John, I was genuinely just like really taken aback by almost immediately how good it obviously is. Because like, this is one of those films that was talked about whenever we were younger and you'd hear about Seven. Oh, you gotta watch Seven.
And I think I think it was more the spectacle back then. But
yeah, it was all it's minging. Basically, it was, it's fucking humming. What he does.
There's this big fat guy who he like force feeds. Right. Oh my God.
Yeah, literally, I'm pretty sure someone had that conversation with me at school. Probably within your earshot. Oh, your God, he does this and he does that. Oh, it's fucking, and me probably standing there going, But it's a fucking magnificent piece of filmmaking, and it shouldn't be reduced to just that.
Yeah.
But that element of it is actually really clever. Mm-hmm. And it is nasty and grimy and gritty, and it is a really important part of like the tone.
And it also, it doesn't show like the actual on-screen violence.
Yeah,
there's not much of it. You know, this is all after the fact. You know, you're seeing the aftermath of this absolute fucking lunatic, and it works very well. So yeah, it is gory, but at the same time, I mean, it's about a serial killer. Of course, it's gonna be.
Yeah, you gotta go in expecting to see something.
Yeah,
you know, and I think what you do see is appropriate.
Yeah,
and it's none of it seems gratuitous.
Yeah.
But you know, some of it is disturbing.
Oh, quite a lot.
Even now, I find I had the shivers a few times this time watching it.
Yeah.
One in particular, I think the lust one, just I don't like that at all. That's bad. This is a wonderful film. It's grimy, it's dirty, and it's beautiful. Mm-hmm. And I think I love it. Well, John, the sun is going down, and I gotta say, it's a nice sort of beautiful pinkish sunset, even though we're in Noir Rain City. The rain has temporarily stopped, and Noir Rain City is, of course, on the coast, as we know, so we're getting that nice sort of horizon line with a nice pastel pink sky. Something some people might call a vaporwave aesthetic.
Ooh.
Let's say. And I can hear the dulcet tones of some new romantic song in the distance. Just
dear.
Yeah. I don't know. I'm finding it quite relaxing. So with that in mind, John, what did you think of Michael Mann's Manhunter from 1986?
I haven't seen Manhunter in a long time. Yeah. And I had good kind of memories of it. I remember liking it, but this is kind of the opposite of Seven for me. I was watching this going, it might just be, maybe it's Michael Mann, maybe I just have something, because I'd had issues with Heat when we rewatched that. I was like going, this isn't nearly as good as I remember, but I find this movie very slow, very cheesy at times, and it's guilty of a lot of like telling and not showing. Like, there are long sections with William Peterson, who's playing Will Graham, just like standing, monologuing about he did this in a very monotone way. So it's like
he talks to himself a lot.
Yeah. The awful synthy music was really off-putting for me and didn't really like set the mood for me, you know. And maybe he was going for like that kind of like almost like a juxtaposition of like, you know, what's happening and this, but even then, no, it's just like the music's kind of nothing. It wasn't even, it didn't even juxtapose. It was just kind of like there. It almost was like an afterthought. It's like, oh, I'll have to have music in the scene, fire that in. And again, he's guilty of, Michael Mann is guilty again of not having great female characters, but it also might be a case of just they weren't there in the novel anyway. Because
the original source text, perhaps, which was also the case with, I can't remember. There was another film we were talking about that was based on a book a little while ago that had just the female characters in it were just nothing. I don't recall exactly what it was. But that can be a problem when something's adapted from something else.
Yeah.
You can't necessarily say, oh, the female characters in this are terrible, and that is the fault of X person.
Yeah.
It could be that in the book that's the case.
I will say I watched Red Dragon, which is the remake. Yeah, essentially. It is a remake, because for some reason they couldn't get the name Red Dragon for this one and things like that. But and they do a bit more, like, it's not great anyway. I'm actually just wondering, do I just not like the Red Dragon story, or there's some, there's something that isn't really connecting with me on that. But Reba, is that the blind girl's
Reba
name?
Reba is the name of the guy, the love interest of the killer. Yes,
like, they do a better job of kind of showing why they might get together, like how that relationship would work. Where in this one, it's kind of, it just seems really out of place. It just seems really bizarre, and like, what is going on? And it's like, just the convenience of her being blind so she can't see his hideous scar, which is
it's also kind of worked into the eyes and how that's his.
Yes, well,
it's his fixation.
Yeah, the symbolic thing. I think that's a problem I have with this movie more than anything, is there's so many decisions that are picking symbolism over, like, actual character motivation. Like, there's one, I'm just going to put a spoiler warning on, it's a minor spoiler, but at the very end, Will jumps through a window, and it's really stupid. It's really, really dumb. It's a stupid decision from a character who's meant to be smart, and I think it's all just due to the symbolism, because the window, it's at night, and the window is acting as a mirror, and
they also deliberately time it with the music as
well. And it comes off so bad, and it's just like that kind of shit annoys me. It's like, symbolism's great, and like, using it right in a movie or anything is fantastic in your art, but to do it over the characters and over, like, the story just feels very shallow to me. And I think that's my overview of this movie, is like, it just seems very shallow.
Okay, yeah, I get you. Now, I'm gonna just say, John, that I fucking love this movie. I think this movie is great.
Do you see South Park's ruined me on
inappropriate scene. Music, do you see? It's always sunrise or sunset, do you see?
Do you see?
Do you see the pink sky, do you see? So everything you said is right, and everything you said is why I like it.
I thought that's where it would go.
I like the incoherence of the music to the action. I think the inappropriate soundtrack is one of my favorite things about the film, because you're just like, there's especially a point where the guy's about to do some murder where the music is just completely inappropriate. It doesn't make any sense, and I love that it doesn't make any sense, and it's all cheesy new romantic nonsense. I love the fact that it's always like, there's so much of it is shot like in the golden hour of like sunrise and sunset. But like, you got that, I love the fucking vista, I love the wide shots of the ocean with the pink fucking sky and shit. That stuff's great.
That's another thing. I need to become an FBI profiler, because those fuckers can retire at like 30,
whatever fucking age
or something,
and
they get a big fucking villa out in the ocean.
I think he's on psych pension. I think, as far as I remember from the book,
even still,
as far as I remember from the book, he's basically on disability. Essentially, he can't do his job anymore because of the trauma of the Hannibal Lecter case. But I love the bits where he's standing and he's talking to himself, and he's walking around the house talking to himself as if he's the killer, and like shouting at the house going, "You son of a bitch! You son of a bitch!" I love that.
It's just me and you now, sport. Great line.
Great. He looks at himself in the window and says it. And you're like, that's got symbolism too in buckets. And I love the overwrought symbolism, because it's just like, he's literally staring at this symbol and saying the things, and you're like, okay, this is all coming together in a way that is deliberate. But maybe, yeah, you're right. It's very in your face.
Yeah. I mean, because again, this is like, I mean, very much like Seven. It's the your kind of standard framework of this focuses more on the FBI profiler. Yeah. This is Will Graham trying to, like, they have to get him back for one more job thing,
yeah,
to pursue this deranged serial killer.
It's almost not about the killer. It's about this guy who got too deep.
Yeah.
And is getting too deep all over again and knows it's happening.
And the first on-screen depiction of Hannibal Lecter as well.
Exactly, and some might say the best on-screen depiction of Hannibal Lecter.
I prefer Mads Mikkelsen.
I think Mads Mikkelsen was fucking brilliant, but I fucking love Brian Cox.
Yeah.
He's such a fucking dick. That's what I like about him. He's a smarmy fucker is what he is, and he's like, oh, he's so arrogant and just, he's a real piece of shit, and I love that about him. Mm. Anthony Hopkins is still great in The Silence of the Lambs.
I think the problem with Anthony Hopkins Hannibal is that is the other movies that they made, the ones that actually he's on record as saying they turned this monster into kind of like an anti-hero, and he regrets doing those, like Hannibal and Hannibal Rise, or I don't, he wasn't Hannibal,
Hannibal
Rising. I can't even remember.
Red Dragon.
Yeah.
Hannibal Rising was a prequel thing, I think. I never saw it. It looked bad.
But it kind of ruined this monstrous character, mm-hmm. like kind of made him kind of cool and to some people. But what I liked about his portrayal of Hannibal in Silence of the Lambs, which Brian Cox is kind of doing like a more, like he seems so normal and mundane that it's kind of crazy. Like, but I like Anthony Hopkins is almost like putting on a show, it feels, for Clarice, like all the way and stuff like that. And like the way he's speaking, it comes off.
He's deliberately trying to freak her out because he knows it'll work.
Yeah, and it plays more into his background as a psychiatrist. I don't mind Brian Cox's portrayal at all. Like, you know, in fact, he researched, he based it on a couple of serial killers that he actually met and interviewed stuff like that. So he did do his homework, and he does. Yeah, he's got this air of just arrogance and just like he's smart. Yeah, he's the smartest person in the room, and
he thinks he's the smartest person in the room. And it aggravates him to think that maybe someone might not think he is.
Yeah.
Like, he's dead. Whenever Will Graham's, like, talking about, like, I'll catch him, you know, I'm smarter than him. And he's like, well, you caught me. Does that mean you're smarter than me?
Yeah. Yeah. It's a bit defensive, isn't he?
yeah. And, like, there's a wonderful scene where he's like, when he figures out that Will's not really there for his advice, he just wants to be in his presence so that he can absorb some of him or something, like to get like back into the headspace. And he says to him, you're just here to get the scent. Yeah. And then whenever he freaks him out, he runs away. If you want to smell something, smell yourself as he's running away.
Very mature Hannibal.
Yeah, I know. But it means something because you are one of us.
Yeah.
You are one of these people, I think. And maybe it's just like, I really love this film. I do love this film so fucking much. Yeah. It's a little beyond logic.
Yeah, I would say so, because I don't know. I find it very, I find part of it very tough to get through just because the pace is like treacle. It's like walking through treacle. And plus, on a technical level, the sound is fucking terrible. There's scenes where you can literally hear the noise gate activating and deactivating. Like, for a production of this size, you're kind of going, "What the fuck?" Like, but it just didn't really hook me. Apart from like, there was a few scenes, and I think that's about it. Really, don't know. Again, the "Do you see" thing was ruined because South Park did it so well.
It's funny. Now it's funny when you see it. Yeah. It's just like, here I am at Disney World. Do you see? Here I am on the Flume ride. Do you see?
But I think I might just have to revisit all the Michael Mann movies that I used to love. And
maybe you
think,
don't like
Mann. Maybe I just don't like his style. Maybe I've kind of grown out of it or something. Or
maybe we'll find a way to watch Thief and Collateral or something at some point. And you can really hack
probably
into
a
it.
Very easy way to watch those movies.
Yeah, absolutely, yes. But yeah, I'm just going to go down on record, official record, is saying I really, 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 really like Manhunter, and you can tell me that's crazy if you like.
That's you're allowed to like what you want.
Yeah, I love the music. I love the color palette. I think that's one of the things I really like about it.
I mean, you've suffered a lot of trauma in your life, and you know it's obviously affected you this
badly.
I'm
going to ignore you and carry on as if you're not speaking. I mean, it's
typical.
Like
trauma
it's a Dino De Laurentiis production, who's very much, we talked about Dino De Laurentiis before, when we were talking about Demons, and how you could see the influence of Dario Argento on his work.
Mm-hmm.
And the harsh color palettes and the lighting of, like, this scene is going to be blue and this scene is going to be green and this other scene is going to be, like, harsh pink, you know. And you see that in this film all over it. You're like, there's scenes that are just lit really harshly and unrealistically, but, like, deliberately unrealistically. Mm-hmm. And I love it. I mean, you can see it, like, if you look at the cover of, like, the poster for this movie or the cover of the DVD, it's exactly that as well. I love that style.
Yeah.
It's so cheesy. Much like the word you used, cheesy.
Yeah. It is. It's very, it's so, yeah. It is very 80s. It's dripping with 80s. The 80s.
Fuck yes, you are correct, and I think maybe that's what I like about it.
I mean, it could just be that, you know, that I'm averse to the 80s, which wouldn't be bad, but like I kind of like things to be a bit darker, a bit grittier. Like I you know, just going to a filmmaker that we know I love of why is my mind blanking? Sidney Lumet.
Talking about Sidney Lumet because I can't believe you would forget his name.
Yeah, no, it, for some reason, just as soon as I went to say it, it just disappeared from my mind. That's a wee bit worrying. But when he made Serpico, he got into a lot of fights with De Laurentiis because he was the producer on that.
Yeah.
And it just that's just how I'm linking this. But you know, that kind of thing, or where it's, I kind of like that darker, grittier thing, and like Seven or I Saw the Devil, where it's, I don't know, I prefer that. Like this felt like a TV movie or something, and again, that's probably why you love it. But
I do. I love, the music is great.
I very much felt like there was times where you're like, okay, this is a set, and it's so obviously a set that someone's like thrown red paint around. It's like, that's kind of hilarious. But
yeah, there's a few moments where it's clearly a set and you're looking out and that's a back projection of a sunset and Michael Mann is loving it and I'm loving it too, Michael. Oh yes, it's gorgeous. I love a nice pink sunset in a film over the ocean. It's with just gentle sort of like the drums building in the background and like some keyboards going, you know, it's, maybe a saxophone comes ripping in.
I think another problem I have with it is that, which just from watching Red Dragon, although Red Dragon had the advantage of, you know, having all these other, having the success of Silence of the Lambs and all this stuff that came after it, where they have like a wee intro thing that kind of showed you Will Graham and Hannibal, like, you know, when he finally works out Hannibal is the killer and stuff, and how he catches him, and it actually felt a bit weird that they didn't have something like that in this, for the amount of like slow, like this starts off very slow and like these long shots, and it's like, okay, get started, come on. And they could have had like a wee intro to show you just how badly. And again, it just all goes back to this. They're telling and not showing so much.
Yeah.
And they don't show you why Hannibal and Will Graham have this like deep connection, really. It's all told to you, but to me, it's just, again, that shallowness to the storytelling, where it's just like, okay, I'll just take your word for it then. It's like, I'm very traumatized. Okay. Like, he literally walks through the fucking supermarket with his kid. and goes, yeah, I got traumatized because I was talking to a serial killer and I put myself in his position and now I'm traumatized. There you go.
Yeah.
Do you want coffee, Dad? Aye, sweet.
That's a gross oversimplification, but all right.
It might as well be, though. It's still...
Okay. Let's stop ragging on that. Yeah, I really like it. You don't,
no.
Obviously. I had a thoroughly good time watching this film. I had a thoroughly good time with all these films, actually.
I kind of sat there going, yeah, we should have just watched Silence of the Lambs. I'm not a massive Silence of the Lambs fan either. Like, I think it is overrated for what... Like, I think it's good, but I do think it's overrated.
Yeah, and Hannibal was bad.
Yeah.
Hannibal was... way more boring than anything else involving Hannibal Lecter.
Yeah, I liked the TV series up to a point where it was like...
The first two seasons of it were very, very good.
And most of that was because of Mads Mikkelsen. I thought his portrayal of the character was fantastic because you could... he's just dripping with charm. He's just... you could understand why people kind of fell for him. And, he was... There was just something in kind of entrancing about him, or maybe that's Mads Mikkelsen. I
thought
it worked, but then it kind of went a bit batshit crazy and it just got more and more ridiculous.
Yeah, so you're right, but I still like it a lot, and I am going to continue to really like everything, even the bad bits.
Do you see?
In Manhunter, I do. Yes, I'd say yes. I see. Yes. I see. Well, John, I think the problem now is that there's just too many serial killers.
Mm-hmm.
They're all over the place. Like, we could probably just... I mean, you could throw a dart in a crowd and probably hit one. But the problem is, which one's our guy?
Yeah,
we don't care about all these other serial killers.
No.
We just want the jelly bean killer. Because that's a terrible waste of jelly beans.
Yeah.
You know, because you're not allowed to eat them. That's the problem.
It'd be all right if he didn't steal our jelly beans and use them in the murders.
Yeah, if he wasn't specifically using our jelly beans that we saved up.
Yeah.
And he's putting them under the eyes of corpses, which, you know, I'm not averse to eating those jelly beans. But the police took them.
I thought you were going to say, I'm not averse to corpses.
Well, that too.
Yeah.
Yeah, that sort of plays into the whole thing. But it's the fact that the police took them and put them in the evidence lockup, and now we don't have our jelly beans anymore.
Bastards.
I know. So let's get this fucker and wreak our jelly bean-based revenge. Maybe we'll get him to buy us another bag or something.
Yeah, that'll teach him.
Because we can't do that ourselves. We can't just go and buy more jelly beans.
That's the principle of the matter.
Yeah. Damn right. I'm glad we're aligned on this. So, John, that being the case, what did you think of I Saw the Devil, directed by Kim Ji-woon from 2010?
It's just wonderful.
Isn't it fucking great?
It's fucking horrendous, but it's wonderful. Oh, it's absolutely disgraceful, but it's wonderful.
Yeah. It's fucking ridiculous, but it's wonderful.
Yeah, it really is. It's very much like Seven. You know, all the technical aspects are there. The cinematography is fantastic. The editing, the music's really good. The atmosphere is... is pitch perfect. When I watched this one after Seven, and a few days after it, I was even just sitting there thinking, this is going to be a difficult week, because they both have the technical aspects completely nailed.
Yeah.
And the acting's great as well. You know, we've got a return of Choi Min-sik.
Yeah, Choi Min-sik, who is a fucking powerhouse.
He's fucking great.
That man might be one of the greatest living actors today.
He's fantastic. He's so creepy. He's so creepy in this. From the very moment you see him, your back is just all tense. You're just like, no, don't, just go away.
Yeah.
But, and he continues it. Like, he goes through many, many emotions through this. And... he plays this absolutely irredeemable monster pitch perfectly. Like, yeah. It's a joy to watch him get his ass kicked various times.
Yeah, he does being beaten up and fucked really yeah. well.
And I should say that Lee Byung-hun, who plays the protagonist.
I mean, they're not 100% pure but definitely he's the protagonist, and Choi Min-sik is playing our antagonist. I don't think you can deny that he's the bad guy.
No, God. If you do, I think you need to be locked up very much like Hannibal Lecter. Like, you need to be removed from society. But, because in this, you know, the serial killer accidentally kills the fiancé of a secret agent. Kind of sounds ridiculous.
Unwittingly, it's not by accident. He unwittingly kills. So he's like police intelligence agent or something. Yeah. Like, he's an intelligence guy anyway, isn't he?
Yes, And then, quite unique, I'm going to throw up like an early spoiler warning here, because this movie kind of is very different from your usual like serial killer like cop affair, and that, so spoiler warning, and that the serial killer gets caught kind of halfway through the movie.
Yeah, it doesn't trade in mystery like other films do. It doesn't care about whether or not you know who's doing it and why.
Yeah, because it doesn't even explain. He's just a maniac. Like, he doesn't have like a deep religious insane thing like John Doe in Seven. He doesn't have like, there's no, other than it's women, it's young women that he's killing. He doesn't seem to have much motive or much MO or anything like that. He's just kind of whatever he can kind of find.
He has a thing he does. I mean, he likes to dismember.
Yeah.
That's his
And that's thing. That's shown in such a, like, it's done so well, and they do so much with so little in these early scenes, especially where it seems almost like a job to him. Like, he's just, it's so mundane. He's sitting smoking and he's having a beer and he's just like almost like shrugging his shoulders. Right. Oh, better chop her head off now. And like her pleading with him to let her live and things like this is just, you just see the blankness on his face. Like, it's not even registering. He's like, she's not even human to him. It's horrible. And the same goes for our secret agent character. You know, very early on, he's on the phone to his fiance, and he sneaks into the bathroom so he can sing like a wee love song to her that, you know, she's obviously asked him to. But he's trying to do it away from everyone, and like, it tells you so much about his character, because like, someone walks in and then he kind of stops abruptly and embarrassed, you know, kind of like, you know, wants to show, oh no, I'm manly and stuff. And it takes him a while to kind of break down from her death. He, even when he sees the severed head, when they, and this is all at the start, this is not like, you know, when he sees
the first 10 minutes,
when he sees her severed head being lifted out of the river, he holds back and he tries not to show any emotion. It's only really at her funeral. And I just love how, again, very much like Seven, there's so much character development in in wee small moments, and it really informs the character as well.
Yeah.
But also, this movie is a fucking gory, horrendous mess.
This movie does not hold back with the blood.
No.
Like,
and the pain. Saying,
yeah. Like, when we're talking about Seven, we were very much talking about aftermath.
Yeah.
And there's a lot of sort of practical effect in Seven, but they're not active.
No.
It's like, look at the state of this place, you know. Whereas in this, it's, oh my God, I can't believe he's doing that. Oh, that's horrific.
It's hard to watch.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah,
I've got a pretty strong stomach for this kind of stuff. Yeah. And this is pushing it. Like, it's,
yeah, I mean, there's a scene where there is a lot of stabbing.
Yeah.
In a car. And
how is that done, by the way?
You keep expecting it to stop. And then it just, oh my God, it's still happening. Holy shit.
How is that scene?
Like how did they shoot it like that?
It's so well done. Yeah, it must be like, there must have like,
must be parts
CGI
of the car missing or something.
I think the whole top of the car must have been missing. And the camera is on a rig, obviously, like you know, it's circling round.
Yeah.
And they must have just like added in CGI wise, like the outside of the car, because
it looks so good.
Yeah, it looks amazing.
Oh, it's everything in this film. This film does look great.
Yeah.
It's so well shot. And it also has that thing. It's something I've noticed about Korean cinema in general.
Mm-hmm.
That it they tend to portray the police
as bumbling idiots.
Being bumbling idiots.
Yeah.
And it seems to me like maybe that is... I recently watched, again, we're going to get in back into the realms of actual real-world serial killers.
Oh, wonderful.
But there was a serial killer in Seoul about not that long ago, really. I recently watched a documentary about it called The Raincoat Killer.
Oh, yeah.
And there's a documentary on Netflix about it that I would highly recommend. It was fascinating.
Mm-hmm.
But the cops in that were literally talking about the fact that Korean police are incompetent.
Fuck.
And that this case was the one that motivated them and made them get better at their jobs.
Jesus.
And actually become an efficient crime unit.
Yeah.
Because they're all like talking about how proud they are of how they are now, and how bad it was then, and how Korean cops are incompetent. So I feel like maybe there's a cultural thing
yeah.
in Korea where cops are bad at their jobs.
I wonder if in another couple of decades they'll be turning around going, oh no, those guys from 2020s, nah, they were rubbish.
Oh, they were terrible.
Fucking idiots.
Yeah, so that's like a thing running through this in a way, because like, yeah. It seems to me in this, there's sort of a... I guess there's sort of a John Wick kind of element.
Definitely.
Of because John Wick has this weird underground sort of like the world of assassination and all these assassin network. Whereas this, there just seem to be all these serial killers everywhere.
Yeah.
Like he's fucking bumming a lift at one point and he ends up in a car with two of them.
Apparently,
when he's hitchhiking.
Apparently, if you go out into the countryside of Korea, it's just wall to wall serial killers.
Everyone you meet
can't move for them.
Yeah, I mean, yeah, it's so ridiculous. And then there's these other two ones that he knows as well that he goes yeah. to stay with, and it's just like this is fucking ridiculous
yeah.
what's happening here. But I love that they're just leaning into it. Like, of course,
yeah,
of course, there's serial killers.
Yeah, because
like,
there's genuine moments of comedy in this as well. And
oh yeah,
it's actually again another thing that's done very well. Where there's things like that. It's like dark comedy, of course. It's
about very dark.
Comedy. Yeah, very
comedy,
dark.
Yeah.
But there's times where you like go, you know, it'll be maybe the antagonist reaction to something, and you laugh, and then he holds the face for that wee bit longer, and you go, "Oh shit!"
Yeah.
So like instantly, like you know, you have this like wee that's funny into, "Oh no, now it's disturbing." That's it. Like, and it happens a few times. It's very very well done, but yeah, like I love this movie. It's great.
It's fucking brilliant. It's grisly and it's funny and it's sad and it's satisfying at times.
Mm-hmm.
There is something very... It's the way in which the protagonist is wreaking his revenge.
Yeah.
It's a really good idea.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's like the... I'm going to find you, but I'm not going to arrest you.
Yeah.
I'm just going to keep stopping you.
Yeah.
So I'm messing you up.
Completely just fuck with you.
Yeah, I am going to torture you in the only way that I can figure out how to really do that.
Mm-hmm.
And that's by stopping you getting off on your murders, basically.
And it gets to the stage where, you know, this is very much one of these things of like, oh, to catch a monster, you have to become
yeah.
a monster type thing. You know,
who's
he
the
gets,
real monster here? You're just like me.
Yeah, although thankfully they don't say that. Or,
no.
Well, or do they? They might do, actually. He says something similar, but he doesn't like go, you and I are the same. Which,
yeah, he doesn't do that.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, that's the theme. That has sort of a theme in all three of these films.
Yeah. I mean, there is like the father-in-law character who says revenge is for the movies. Or
right.
No, sorry, the sister-in-law character says that, revenge is for the movies.
Yeah.
And that's the point that our protagonist probably should have stopped, but he's just at this point so rage filled that he keeps going.
Yeah.
And things, let's just say, things don't pan out too well for anyone involved, really.
Yeah.
Again, very much like Seven, this is a very, very, very grim movie. Like, it's not a feel good end. It's not, you know, everything's wrapped up in a neat little bow and you know, our heroes live happily ever after. It's
no
shite.
Yeah, it's rough, but it's rough, but it's so well put together.
Yeah,
and it's beautifully made, and the performances are just excellent. I have an affection for the director of this.
Mm-hmm.
Made another great film called A Bittersweet Life.
Yes.
That I think is marvelous. It actually features Lee Byung-hun,
yeah,
who plays the protagonist in this movie. He's also
in A Tale of Two Sisters as well. It's very good.
That's so good. I fucking love that film. Oh, it's a really good, proper, like, ghost story horror movie.
Mm-hmm.
And it's... Oh, and it was remade in a way. It was remade. There was an American remake of it that I watched. I didn't know it was a remake of it. Yeah, it's not called A Tale of Two Sisters. It has another title.
Tale of Three Sisters, because the American one has to be better.
No, it's like the something. It's like the Unloved or the something. In fact, I'm going to just cheat here and look it up, because I remember I watched the whole film and I didn't realize it was a remake of A Tale of Two Sisters until the last 5 minutes.
The Uninvited.
The Uninvited, that's it, yeah. It has this. It had the same twist. Mm. And then I realized after I'd watched this entire garbage film, I was like, wait a minute, they're just... I thought in my head, they're just ripping off A Tale of Two Sisters. And then I looked it up, and it's a straight up... It is a straight up remake that they changed the name of. Maybe they got it finished, and they were like, this isn't really a remake anymore, is it? No, it's just a rip-off now. We've just made a rip-off movie.
Yeah, we did a really bad job. Just change the name.
It's a really bad job, because A Tale of Two Sisters is frightening. It is tight-chested.
Mm-hmm.
It's tight-chested, dark tension.
There was a girl under the sink.
And dread. What?
There was a girl under the sink.
There was a girl under the sink.
That's all I'm saying.
I like that noise. That's good.
Yeah, it's one of those movies. Makes you go.
Yeah. So, A Tale of Two Sisters is wonderful. This guy's a great fucking director. He's made some great movies. I highly recommend. If you like this movie, watch A Bittersweet Life. Mm-hmm. It's brilliant. It's not about. I think it's about like gangsters.
Yeah.
And stuff, and it's fucking marvelous, and Lee Byung-hun is marvelous in it as well.
Mm-hmm.
It's just great. He also made a really fucking wonderful film called The Good, the Bad, and the Weird, which is sort of a remake of The Good, the Bad, and the Ugly, but it's like about like a train heist in a fake Korean Wild West. It's absolute nonsense, but it's wonderful. I think it has the dude from Parasite and The Host in it as well. And it also has Lee Byung-hun is the bad.
He must be a favorite of his then.
Yeah, he plays the bad character in it. He's the man in black, as it were.
Yeah.
With the big black Stetson, and he's probably a bad guy, but at the same time, you don't know.
I've heard the title. I actually didn't realize it was this director, or I probably would have watched it, but...
Yeah, it's wonderful. I highly recommend it. It's fucking brilliant. It's very off-kilter and... I hate to use the word zany, but it's a little zany.
But you just did.
But I did, yeah. And it's a great film. I highly recommend The Good and the Bad and Weird. It's funny and over the top and ridiculous, and I love it. But
so very different from I Saw the Devil.
Very different from I Saw the Devil in tone.
Yeah.
But equally deft in its execution, I would say.
Mm-hmm.
And also, I just want to say this film is marvelous, and I think it is a very, very good contender for best movie about a serial killer.
Yeah.
Yes, it is. In general, it's just great. Well, the sun is rising on Noir Rain City, and the serial killers are mobbing the streets, and, you know, lovely, lovely pink sunrise through the rain, somehow. And also, the serial killers everywhere. The network is aware of us. But we gotta find this jelly
You're
bean
still
guy.
Going with this John Wick idea of
Absolutely.
A network of serial killers?
Absolutely. They all know each other. Yeah. Of course, they're all born with a chip in their head or something. I don't know. So, John,
I know I never seen John Wick.
I never even seen John Wick. I'm just making this up. So,
it's about a candle maker or something.
It's about Mr. Wick, yes, the candle maker. The candlestick maker.
Yes,
it's right, John. Get it right. Yeah. So, we got to find this jelly bean killer. Mm-hmm. And you know, the only way we can do that, it really, is to figure it out based on advice from these movies.
Yeah.
But first, John, which of these did you think was the best movie?
This is difficult.
Yes,
I'd kind of mentioned this already earlier. I don't know that even when I was watching, I saw the devil. I was like, I don't know. And it was like halfway through, I saw the devil, and was kind of hoping there'd maybe be a bit near the end where it gets a bit stupid or slow, or there'd be something that'll like
fuck up at some point. Yeah.
But no, it was great. It was great from start to finish. So why you just go and do that? Why you just go and make two amazing movies, you bastards? I'm not used to this. We're very bad at decision making, and
I've got an even harder decision to make than you, because I liked all three of these films.
You're really... I couldn't even put Manhunter in the category with these. I mean, Jesus.
God damn it. I mean, if
nothing else, the fucking... The terrible sound in more, like, I would say about four or five scenes at least. Long scenes as well. That alone should be enough just to, like, disqualify it, because it's really bad.
Oof.
So bad. Like, you can hear the... Every time the noise gate opens, it's like, no, it's fuck me, like, you know, can you not do your fucking job, right?
Well, they were next to the ocean the whole time.
This was in the city.
Oh.
Yeah. Sometimes sometimes it was interior shots. I was going, how the fuck does this even happen? But anyway, plus that whole, like, last third, the climax of the movie.
Ooh.
It was so stupid. So, like, what do you call him? Frank Dollarhide? Is that the killer? What's his first name? Or Mr. Dollarhide, anyway, the killer. Yeah. Running about like the Terminator, one hand and a shotgun. It's like,
yeah,
fuck
just
off.
action moving it up at the end. Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, Tom Noonan is great casting for a big, scary dude. Like,
I mean, it's...
He gets typecast a lot, maybe because of this movie.
Well, I think as well, like, it's kind of well known, or at least I assume it is, that actors tend to be quite short. Tom Noonan's kind of a tall guy. I think he's over 6 foot, maybe a good bit over 6 foot. So, yeah, his only option is really to get cast as fucking weirdos, because he'll just he's always going to look really tall against people like Tom Cruise, who are like, you know, 4'5" or something.
He was in that. He was very good in. He was in one episode of The Blacklist.
Yeah,
and there's a scene with with James Spader, who's not a tall man, and he's standing next to him, and he's playing a guy. I believe they call him the stew maker, who disposes of bodies by dissolving them, and is a creep in that, and he's fucking so pitch perfect in that role that, it's hard to deny that, like, he plays it so fucking well, and he's so creepy in Manhunter as well. He's brilliant. I'm just going to try and make you pick Manhunter here.
That's never going to happen.
It's never going to happen, is it?
You're wasting your time, sir.
Damn. But props to Tom Noonan anyway. He's very good. And I do actually think everybody's great in Manhunter. I think it's like, was it Dennis Farina as his boss is very good too. Everyone's great. It's a great movie, John. Pick it. Pick Manhunter.
I must have watched the wrong version or something like that.
Say it's the best.
It's not. It's a terrible okay. It's a terrible Damn. Travesty of a yeah. movie. It's fucking boring.
So, Seven or I Saw the Devil then, John, what's it going to be?
Well, I don't know. It's... See, there's like a recency bias of like 4 days or something with I Saw the Devil. So like, yeah. I'm tempted to go for that, but they're both so good. Like they're both masterclasses of this genre.
Yeah.
That I honestly don't know what one to pick, and they're very different, or they're very similar and very different in a lot of ways. You know, yeah. as we mentioned, they both get their atmosphere pitch perfect, and they're both technical, like technically. I can't speak. As far as technical aspects go, they're both on point. You know, I can't really fault them with that. So I don't know.
You
this
have
is difficult.
To pick
you have
one,
to pick one.
John.
Yeah. I do, don't I?
Yeah, you do, because I'm demanding that you do.
I suppose the only thing that really pushes I Saw the Devil higher for me is that, and this goes back to like even the first time I seen it, it kind of defied all my expectations, and that I thought I knew what I was getting myself into with I Saw the Devil, where it's like, oh, detective, he's got a detective guy tracking down the serial killer who murdered his fiance. Yeah, I've seen movies like these before.
Oh, yeah.
And then like when you get to that R point, like it's more or less right in the R, or maybe a bit before, where he catches him, he beats the shit out of him, gives him money, and like and just disappears,
leaves.
And you're like,
just leaves.
Yeah, and you're
yeah.
like, right, like he puts the tracker in him as all. You see that, and you're kind of sitting, what the fuck? And then the serial killer has the gall to go, he's a crazy bastard.
They call him that you're a crazy yeah. bastard. Yeah, it's like, fuck off, man.
Yeah. But, and plus, I think because the serial killer's more of a part in I Saw the Devil, like, John Doe is kind of divorced from reality in a lot of, well, in many ways, but also, like, story-wise, like, he comes in towards the end, and Kevin Spacey's very good. He's brilliant in it. Like, but you know, as this stoic character who kind of breaks just a handful of times. You know, it's more of a battle of wills between him and Morgan Freeman.
Yeah,
but they don't even kind of realize that it's a battle of wills between them because he's fixated with Brad Pitt's character, which I like. But and I Saw the Devil. Like, I like the scenes where you see the serial killer. You know, having a normal job. Where
he drives a bus for school and all this stuff.
And you're kind of like, it adds a whole new level of creepiness to it. And it just gets under your skin so much. And like that first scene that you see him where he's pretending that he wants to help the girl out. And then it lingers.
So creepy. Yeah. That's so well shot. Yeah. I love that. It's a beautiful scene. It's really like nice to look at.
Yeah.
And then very brutal.
And then like... It's that moment where he's looking in when she goes, no, it's fine, I'll just wait for the tow truck.
And he's just staring at her.
He just stirs too long, and then you can see he's made his decision up about something, and he wanders off. And I'm going to pick I Saw the Devil, but Seven's a very, very clear. Like there's like a hair between them here.
Great. They are both marvelous.
Are you going to pick Manhunter then? Just to be a dick?
Yes. I don't know. I think I did enjoy it more. I don't know. There's something about Manhunter. I don't know if it's a nostalgia thing.
It must be. It honest to God must be. Because
I just really like the tone of the film. I like how weird it is. You know,
see,
I
don't even say
it's
weird. It's just...
I think
clinical
and
boring.
I think it's a bit weird. I think it's just a wee bit weird.
To me, it feels like a lot of those movies that came out around that time. You know, I'm trying to remember the names of some of them that were just kind of that. Like these, because there was a lot of like serial killer movies or like these thrillers that came out around the 80s. And to me, it just fits in with them perfectly. Where it just doesn't feel like anything. special. Like, again, I remember enjoying it at the time, you know, when I was younger, but I probably just seen it come on TV and it filled the time in then. But just watching it, like, watching it now, was like, this is a waste of my time.
Well, I still really like,
because Michael
it.
Mann makes movies too long as well.
Like, it does.
It has no business being 2 hours. Like, I saw The Devil was almost 2.5 hours. Depends what version you watch, because this is another one that different countries have different things taken out.
There's different cuts.
There's a lot of different cuts. Like, a lot of, like, each country's boards were like, oh, you can have that, but you can't have this, and you can't show that, but you can show that, you know. So it varies wildly, but you know, the other movies, Seven and I Saw the Devil, were over 2 hours, and they flew in. They completely just had my attention from start to finish, where Manhunter was a clock watching nightmare. It was just like, fuck me, like, okay, well, go through your process again of, you wanted the mirrors so it looked like they were alive and blah blah blah. And it's like, yeah, don't show anything. Like, even I didn't like Red Dragon, but even it did those scenes better, where it gave you a bit more visually to kind of latch on to when he's going through.
I like
this.
The bits you get, that one bit where, like, the woman gets up in bed and you see, like, the light in her eyes and stuff like that. I think that's really cool.
Again, yeah, there's a handful of scenes, and I'm not saying, like, it's devoid of any merit. I'm just saying most of it is.
Oh, it's good that you can come to that compromise.
I mean, it would have made a good short.
Well, I still really like it. See, I'm not really actually. Well, I don't know if I'm picking it. Again, I'm still in a quandary, because all three of these films.
Well, you have to pick one.
I know, and I will, John. And I'm not scared of that like you are. All right? I'm not afraid to kill my darlings. But I do like Manhunter a lot. I like Seven a lot. Mm-hmm. And I like I Saw the Devil a lot. Mm-hmm. So. That extra inflection on the a lot wasn't really meant to mean more.
Yeah, well,
it is very good though. Maybe Seven. Oof.
Yeah, I struggle with those two. Like, even now, I'm still like going, but Seven does have this. It's so clever. Both so clever, and they're both saying, they both say a lot more than just the surface level as well. You know, like, even that tired cliche of, like, you know, become, you have to become the monster to catch the monster. There's a lot more that's happening than I Saw the Devil that I don't want to delve too much into at this point, but I think it's better just to watch the movie and, like, glean what you can from it.
It explores some of the same territory as Old Boy.
Yes,
in a way. Another in which Choi Min-sik plays the opposite character from Old Boy, really, because it's Lee Byung-hun who's playing that character who's investigating and is, like, then trying to get the revenge. So there's a lot of back and forth in Old Boy, and then by the time you get to the end, you're like, who really got revenge? Whereas in this, it's very clear.
Yeah.
But then it does a similar thing of, like, now he's got a reason to get revenge on this guy, and who really comes out at the end? Up. Does anyone come out up? Not really, but I do love the end of it as well. The end's very good.
Yeah,
it's a real nasty thing to do.
Yeah,
at the very end, in the same way that at the end of Old Boy is a real nasty. There's a lot of crossover here.
There
with
is,
like,
oh,
totally
definitely.
And, like, the message. But and like, a lot of Park Chan-wook films are about vengeance and how vengeance leaves a hole, and it's never fulfilling.
So, because I'd often forget that this isn't a Park Chan-wook, because I feel that this movie does share a lot of similarities with that whole Vengeance trilogy that he does. Even the fact that
Choi Min-sik is in it.
Yeah, exactly.
It doesn't help, because he's in all those movies as well. He's in Sympathy for Lady Vengeance too.
Yeah, and Lee Byung-hun is in GSA, which it isn't part of the Vengeance trilogy, but is another Park Chan-wook.
Yeah.
Little movie, so I kind of just in my brain always, like, end up going, that was Park Chan-wook, and then go, no, it wasn't.
No, it was not. No.
But as well, I get the ending of I Saw the Devil is fantastic, but so is Seven. It's a big, tense, horrible nightmare.
They all end really well, and who can forget what's in the box?
What's in the box?
You know, I mean, that's just burned in. You know what? I'm picking 7.
And I mean,
I'm picking 7 because that's fucking marvelous.
Yeah.
That whole final scene
so
is
tense.
Fucking incredibly well done. And it's not cheesy. It's not like, it doesn't feel manufactured.
No.
It doesn't feel, it feels clever and intentional.
Mm-hmm.
And natural all at once. It all really works.
Yeah.
And like, that's the first time, you know, you look at that and you're like, Brad Pitt's a really good actor. Because a lot of the movie, you're like, he's acting like an arrogant dick, and that's fine. But there's just these few wee moments, so you get a little sort of blip of, oh, there's more to this character.
Yeah.
And I get that through the performance. And the end of it is that just a needle point, like a fine point of shit. And everyone's great, and it's so well written. It's so well put together. And to be honest,
even Gwyneth Paltrow's good in it.
Even Gwyneth Paltrow's
is
good in it,
shocking.
Which is marvelous. Yeah, even professional con artist Gwyneth Paltrow is good in this movie. So at least we can give her props for that.
Yeah,
yeah. This is before she started swindling the masses with her fake medical crap.
Yeah.
So I don't know, maybe she hadn't gone off. I don't know if she went off the rails or if she was always a terrible person. I don't know. But anyway, enough about that. I love David Fincher.
Yeah, David Fincher's a fantastic filmmaker.
Because I will still sit down and watch Alien 3 and enjoy it. And I will, like, it's not the director's cut because he would never put
I'm starting to get why you like Manhunter now. Severe brain damage.
Suddenly it all becomes clear. Kevin got hit in the head very badly a long time
got
ago.
Got kicked in the head by a horse.
In approximately 1993, perhaps. So, like, there is something to... When you look at the... I guess it's the assembly cut of Alien 3. It's not the director's cut, because David Fincher didn't have anything to do with it.
Yeah.
But it's the extended alternate cut. Is a way better film than what showed up in the cinema.
Mm-hmm.
It's still not a masterpiece. It's still not like the sequel to Aliens that people wanted. It feels like it's a weird half-ass sequel to Alien.
Little did they know what other sequels they'd be getting to Alien and prequels.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, if you want to put it in, like, in the pantheon, it's still the third best Alien movie. Really?
Yep.
Like, Prometheus, we talked all about, you know, we spent a long time talking about Prometheus on a previous episode.
Not,
I'm not
going to
get into that, but it does look nice. Alien Covenant looks nice, but is devoid, the content is just not there. Anyway, but Alien 3, there's something to some aspects of it that I can get behind.
So is Alien 3 your favorite serial killer movie?
I mean, that's more of a slasher movie than a serial killer movie, John, if you want to get that into it.
I didn't really feel the alien's motive.
Yeah, it didn't feel like there was nothing ritualistic
about
the killings in Alien 3. But anyway, yeah, David Fincher's a marvelous director, and 7 is this great sort of, like, comeback, I guess, from Alien 3.
Yeah.
That was just like, oh, this guy is good, and in fact is very good, and can really just, like, captivate, and, like, yeah, it's well put together, it's well edited, it's excellently paced.
Yeah.
You can't fault the pacing, that was a big problem with you for Manhunter. Yeah. And let's not talk about Manhunter again, because I don't have the energy to defend it anymore. But 7 is marvelous. I Saw the Devil is also a fucking marvelous film.
Yeah.
But yeah,
I'm flip-flopping like fuck here, because... Yeah. Like, I want to pick 7 now, but as soon as I say I'll pick 7, I know I want to pick I Saw the Devil. So I think one of us should pick one or one the other and cheat.
I think, well, no, I don't think it's cheating, because I do, because I think it's the noir thing about 7. It's the dirty city. It's the dirty
city. So well. Yeah.
Is so well realized and depicted.
Yeah.
Even, like, just in the way... You can hear a little bit of Sam Spade in Morgan Freeman when he's talking about the city.
Yeah.
Or when he just offhand mentions terrible things that have happened, and just to reinforce his point about why would anyone want to be here.
Yeah.
You know,
and it's great to see Morgan Freeman. Like, it's kind of sad now that Morgan Freeman's just more or less used as an exposition dump because he has that amazing voice. You forget that he's actually fucking great. When he's great in this role. He's a fantastic actor. You know, he's so good, and the two of them really hold the film together. I find in their relationship and how it kind of deepens as time goes on, and. Yeah. I don't know, and the fact that, I mean, I mentioned it briefly earlier, that Morgan Freeman and Kevin Spacey are really the two, like the Sherlock and Moriarty characters going against each other, but it's almost like Kevin Spacey doesn't realize or something, you know, or he doesn't care. He's more fixated
on the wrong guy.
Yeah, you know, he's not the brains that's fucking taking him down. It's Morgan Freeman,
But at the same time, it all kind of works out for him, so he knew what he was doing along.
Well, that's
I guess.
True, yeah.
Yeah, it wouldn't have worked
on
the other guy, because he knows exactly what's going on. You know, he's not going to fall for that shit.
No.
Yeah, so I'm going to pick 7 then. 7 is great, and I love, and again, we have a deep-seated love for noir cinema here, and it's just really, it's a really great tribute to that while being just its own thing, and it did spawn a lot of imitators. But some of those imitators did all right, and a lot of them didn't. But it's great. So, John, that being the case, which of these movies best helps us track down, defeat, stop this fictional serial killer?
Well, I saw The Devil's not going to work for us because I'm not related to any police people, so that can give me like files.
We can't get the insider information that being an intelligence guy would offer.
Yeah, so I think we're already shot in the foot with that one, so we're never going to find him that way.
No.
If we go up to the police and go, "Can I have a file on all your serial killers who use jelly beans?" I don't think they're going to give it to us. Although I would love to go to the police station and say that.
Get out of here, you strange man.
What the fuck? I'm writing a novel.
I'm writing a novel about jelly beans. The history of... I need to know about... I'm doing the murder chapter now. Every book has a chapter about murderers. Well, I'm on to that bit.
And then I'm going on to the jelly bean bit.
Yeah. So 7, they just sort of wait. They do a lot of research in 7.
Yeah, but ultimately... He just hands himself over.
Yeah, like they don't
catch
him.
Which I kind of like. You know, as far as our options here. Because what, Manhunter, he goes to another serial killer and gets told stuff and stuff. And I fell asleep.
Manhunter, he puts himself in the place of the killer and tries to understand and feel their motives.
Oh, yeah.
And then he uses
talks
that
out loud, yeah.
Yes.
I
yes,
put jelly beans in the eyes because my mother slapped me as a child.
Okay, good. John, I think you're finding the zone here.
Oh God,
I think you're in it.
Now I get Manhunter.
You son of a bitch.
You gotta shout,
you son of a bitch. Go on, do it. You son of a bitch.
Just you and me, you son of a bitch.
That's right, you son of a bitch. Sport.
Just you and me, sport.
I think that's it, John. I think you need to become... And then I'll just follow you.
Okay. So I'm like a sniffer dog.
Yeah, and you will lead me to the killer by retracing his steps, by just thinking about jelly beans.
Why do you not use the green jelly beans?
Exactly. Why are they always the blue and the red ones and the yellow ones and never the green ones, John?
It's because the 3D glasses you had as a child, which never seemed to work.
3D glasses that never worked when he was a... Jesus, John... It's the guy that runs the 80s three-dimensional outdoor cinema! Of course!
I mean, if anyone's going to be a serial killer...
Of course! I mean, it was a really good idea during the pandemic to have, like, you know, that drive-in cinema thing happen, and I guess that was probably really good for him. But now that everything's sort of relaxing again, he must have just gone off the rails. Like, his business is just probably failing now. Oh my God, John, you're a genius! Let's bust this punk, but don't get a taste for it.
Can I move out to the ocean now? in my massive house.
You can go
house.
And sit on a beach where it's eternally sunset.
Wonderful.
And you can listen to Flock of Seagulls dawn till dusk.
A fate worse than death.
Yeah, as soon as the sun starts to go down, actually Flock of Seagulls starts playing and it doesn't stop until sunrise is complete.
It's like the most hellish version of tinnitus you could ever imagine.
I don't know, it sounds all right to me, but... Anyway, we are on Twitter. We are at 7dayapocalypse. That is at numeral 7dayapocalypse. You can email us on this week's apocalypse. No, wait. Filmcast at this week's apocalypse. You've twisted my brain with your serial killer ways. Stop it. Filmcast at this week's apocalypse.com. That is filmcast at this week's apocalypse.com. We also post stuff to YouTube as well because we're clever like that.
Yeah.
So, John, let's go out now. Well, you haven't gone too deep, have you?
I am starting to stuff jelly beans into this nearby guy's eyes, so maybe.
All right, well, he's at least he's not resisting.
No,
he's, all right, well,
he's just very interested to see where this is all going.
All right, well, if I get enlisted to catch the next killer, I'll know exactly where to look. Okay, bye!
Do you see?
I do see!